The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. Individual tax matters should be discussed with your tax professional. I'm Hank Stoltz, and this is the podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners. Joining us, the president, financial advisor for ClearPath Financial Partners, Ryan Kittredge. Ryan, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Hank.
Let's talk a little bit about taxes, because everybody is getting all their W-2s, their 1099s, whatever forms it is that, and by this time you should have gotten those forms. Let's actually start there. What if you haven't gotten a W-2 or another form that you're expecting that you need to be able to do your taxes?
Yeah, those are great questions, and they come up every year with clients because if you miss something, then that can be an issue. You know, whether you end up not getting all the deductions you're entitled to and tipping the IRS more than they actually are owed, which nobody really wants to do. I mean, I'm a generous tipper, but you know, I don't want to tip the IRS anymore.
They don't need 20%.
Yeah, no, they don't. They don't. They already get more than that, to start. So certainly don't need above and beyond. You have to amend a return after you already did it because you realize you missed a critical document, and it's just no fun. Nobody likes that. Nobody wants to do their taxes the first go around. They certainly don't want to have another stab at it and have to, you know, bring in their tax preparer and say, "Oops, you know, I missed these things and this wasn't right."
If you don't get something, just contact employers and things, because they should have already gotten them by now. Let me ask you a question. Here it is, 2023, or 2024, but we're doing our taxes for 2023. Is there anything that I can do now that will save me money on my taxes? Or, listen, first of the year comes, that's it. It's over.
Yeah. So no, there definitely still are some tax planning opportunities that'll help you for the prior year. A lot of the things that need to be done to, you know, that square up your tax situation for the year do need to be done by year end, but there are some that you have until the tax deadline, the filing deadline, to do for the prior year. So I definitely want to talk about those, but I just want to just jump back to, you know, the documents and to making sure you got everything, because you're right. I mean, they're coming in left and right. Most of them are available at this point. So you should have gotten things like certainly your W-2 from your job, or if you're an independent contractor, your 1099 would sort of like non-employee compensation statement. So if you haven't received those, definitely ask. A lot of them now, I feel like everything used to go in the mail, and now it's kind of a combination. I get some things in the mail, I get some emailed electronically, and others you actually have to go into a site and download them. So, you know, I think most, you know, most W-2s and things like that are delivered, but a lot of them you actually have to log into your payroll system and download the form. So, you know, take a look at what you had last year, and if things haven't materially changed, then you probably want to look for those same documents.
Make sure that you have all of them. You were just talking about the W-2s and the 1099s, and I think there's even a couple of different types of 1099s. What's the difference about those? One is I am an employee, the other is I am not?
Yeah, so the biggest thing is, so W-2s are employee compensation. So if you receive a regular paycheck and you have, you know, benefits through a company, you have steady hours, you get paid a sort of a regular recurring salary, you have withholdings, you're going to get a W-2. 1099 is really if you, say, are a consultant and you're doing contract work for different employees. And it could be, I mean, we even have clients that like work for a company, they retire, and then the company wants them to continue on some project, and now they're paid as a 1099 employee. So that's like non-employee earned income, but there's actually tons of different types of 1099s, and we don't have to get into all of them because it would be really bad radio, I think, first of all. But
people can call you on that if they really need to know, and hopefully your employer is sending you the right one.
Indeed, yeah. We could chat on a phone call about that. I don't want to put everybody to sleep. But some of the more common ones that aren't from like a job are 1099 INT, which are interest statements. So a lot of the will come from a bank account. And I've actually had a couple of clients call this year and they say, hey, I got this 1099 from XYZ Bank. I didn't get it in prior years. Do you know what this is from? And that's actually fairly common this year, because if the amount of interest you earn on a savings account is minimal, like if it's only a few bucks, they're not going to even issue the document and it's not even reported or taxable. But as interest rates have increased, there are people that their account went from paying 0.1% to maybe a couple few percent, and they earned enough interest for the first time in years to actually warrant the issuance of this document. So that's one to look out for. Another common one are from retirement plans, an IRA withdrawal. You get a 1099-R. And then an important one, and this is one of the few documents that a lot of them, they're not issued for everybody yet because they kind of come in waves, are if you have an after-tax or a taxable investment account. A lot of people call them like a brokerage account, where you own anything. It could be CDs, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, those kind of things. And they pay interest or dividends, or you have gains and losses. That comes on a form that's a consolidated 1099. But the challenge is, because especially if you have lots of different holdings, let's say you have these, Fidelity or Vanguard funds, and then you've got these American funds, the accounting on each of those has to be done by the investment firm, and then they report it to the custodian. So they're getting better about it, but there were some years where, if you go back maybe 5 years to 10 years, there were a lot of people getting them in March and who had already filed their taxes.
Wow, yeah.
So you do want to look out for those, and most of them have been issued at this point, but the vast majority should be by month end.
Yeah, because then, as you had mentioned earlier, then you'd have to go back to your 1040, amend that form. You really you just assume just do it once.
Yeah, exactly. It's not the most fun activity of the year, and to go through that again and then have to pay another filing or preparation fee isn't ideal. So yeah, you want to make sure you got everything lined up. And what we do, to make it a little easier, is for the clients, if we have accounts that we're managing, we'll send them a list and say, hey, these are all the accounts. These are the ones that you should expect a tax document from. These are the ones you shouldn't. And knowing what they're kind of doing with outside accounts through their employer plan or at a bank, we can kind of square that up. So talk to your financial advisor, make sure that you have those documents available.
What else do we need to know from the viewpoint of our financial advisor, from the viewpoint of ClearPath Financial Services, that may be different than what you would report to your accountant?
We don't technically need everyone's all their tax documents. In fact, we don't usually request all of them. We do request copies of their returns once they've been filed, to analyze that return and say, okay, where were we in terms of withholding? Did you owe a lot, or did you get a huge refund, and why? Because neither are really ideal. You sort of want to be closer to break even. Some people, most people, prefer to get a little bit of a refund than have to write a check. But we definitely look at the prior, and then we use it to sort of forecast what could be different about the current in the future year, and make some decisions on that. One thing that we do help coordinate that may be a little different are charitable donations. So if you give money to a charity, and there's either cash or property, and cash could be just cash, like you write them a check or that kind of thing, or it could be they take appreciated stock that they've held, and instead of selling it and paying the taxes and then donating it, they just donate it and they get a full deduction. They don't pay any income tax. And then the organization, if they're a charity, 501c3, they get to take that, and they usually just sell it and put it into their operating account or their endowment fund or whatever, right, and maybe reinvest it, but they don't pay any taxes either. So which is great, but what you really need to get are the letters from those organizations, because we can on our end show, hey, look, this money left the account. It was paid to, I'll use Big Brothers Big Sisters, because I'm a big brother and I was on the board and I give money to them every year. But you want to get the letter that says, hey, thanks, and it's and you want to keep that, not to maybe to feel good about and say, hey, look, I helped these kids out, but really to show that they validated that, they did in fact receive this money from you. In that, in the event of an audit, you'll want to have those things. So you want to track them down, and sometimes they're better about sending them than other times.
I had asked a moment ago about, is there still a way to save money 2023? I should probably also put in there maybe somebody who is in the midst of doing their taxes right now and going, oh boy, I bet I missed some opportunities. How do I save money in 2024?
That definitely. So yeah, from thinking about last year, some of the common things available to a lot of people are making an IRA contribution. So now it depends. There are all these rules. Taxes have a lot of rules. If you have an employer plan and you're doing a 401k and you make a certain income limit, then this may not be deductible. But for a lot of people, it is. And if you can still make an IRA contribution for the prior year. And so let's say, so last year's thresholds were, $6,000 or an additional $1,000. So $7,000 if you're 50 years or older. So let's say you're in an effective tax bracket of between state and federal taxes and you owe 25%, let's say. By making that $6,000 contribution, that becomes a deductible amount at your, and you basically get a tax credit for that effective tax rate. So, that $6,000 contribution could lead to you getting, an extra $1,500 refund or $1,500 off of what you might owe otherwise. So that's a big one.
Right. So when we look at ways in which you can save money, ways in which you want to save money in the new year, that's one of the big ones right there. You also said a moment ago, Ryan, that taxes, there's a lot of rules. Are we in an era, particularly of people who you are working with, you need a professional? The days that our fathers may have said, I'm going to go and battle the IRS and I've got my calculators out and here's my boxes of papers that I saved throughout the year and I'm going to do it all myself. Mm-hmm. That's difficult for people who are in certain brackets and even just for the average Joe, sometimes it might really be that it's difficult if you're going to try and do it yourself because we just can't keep up and know all the rules.
Definitely. And oftentimes is better to use a qualified tax preparer for sure, because it just alleviates, it typically saves you time and worry, but it also is some insurance against a mistake and that somebody else is there, in your corner to be able to justify it or challenge it if it ever came up. A lot of people I think should. I think about myself and I'm not a tax preparer. I'm a certified financial planner, and there were ongoing courses and income tax training. I'm even pursuing, just because I think I'm a glutton for punishment and taking hard tests, but I'm going through the enrolled agent exams, which is basically the IRS conferred designation to say that some things about taxes. It's very similar. I mean, most people know CPAs, certified public accountants, which are state issued designations. Those cover certainly income taxes, but also auditing and accounting. And this is really just focused on income taxation. Technically, what it allows you to do, like a tax attorney or a CPA, is actually represent clients to the IRS and negotiate on behalf of them and that sort of thing.
Terrific for people then to be able to utilize that through ClearPath Financial Partners.
Yeah, no, it is. It's a nice thing, and it's good to have that knowledge. I may never, or at least seldom, have to sort of, be in that situation with a client, doing things well up until that point. But anything could come up. But my point was that even though I have some tax knowledge, I have a CPA and a tax preparer that I use. And it's because of the things I said. I don't want to spend my time doing it. I'm knowledgeable about it, but I'm not an expert the way that they are. As complexities grow, it could be income, but a lot of times it's just like things that make it a little more complicated. And some of those things could be if you have rental properties, if you own a business, you're an S corporation or single member LLC or partnership, but especially an S corp, which has some unique provisions. If you have stock plans through work and you have stock grants or options, or you have sort of like kind of exotic investments, things like, master limited partnerships or commodities futures that they spit off these weird tax forms, these like K-1 partnerships. And it just gets really confusing. And there's so much room to make an error if you have those things going on that I wouldn't even think twice about doing that. It's completely worth the cost to have somebody in your corner. So there are people, but even someone with pretty simple, they have a job, they go to work, and it's pretty simple. They may find benefit as well. Some people like to do it themselves and they kind of get into it, but most people don't, I don't think.
Yeah, no, really. At this point, absolutely. Kind of go along with that a little bit. I don't know as much now, but for a while or for years, I think, some people sort of counted on, I'm going to get a big refund and that's going to fund my vacation. Mm-hmm. Now I think more and more people say, if you end up getting back a ton of money, you've done it wrong. And certainly if you end up owing a ton of money, you definitely probably don't want to have.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Like you said, that was more true in the past. And one of the big reasons is interest rates. And why I say that, somehow interest rates and how much they've changed kind of do factor into a lot of things. But the idea is that, okay, well, if you owe a lot of money, I mean, it's not fun from a cash flow standpoint, right? Especially if you're not expecting it, you don't have it already earmarked. And you're like, oh my God, I have to come up with this huge bill. It's a mental thing, Hank, but like there are clients that have to write a check. It could be $10,000. And they're like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm paying $10,000 in taxes. This is brutal. And I'm like, no, look at your W-2. Like you already withheld $70,000. This is an extra $10,000. But they didn't care so much about the 70 because it just happened out of their paycheck a little by little. And it wasn't that glaring, but to like write out the check, they'll even say, they're like, I get it, it's all the same, but like, oh, it hurts to write the check. So that's no fun. But when interest rates were low, up until like the last couple of years, if you owed a lot and it's enough, that means that you have to pay interest charges and potentially a penalty. The rates were really low. Like people are like, whatever, I pay a few percent, no big deal. Well, those costs have risen. So if you're underpaying, it's usually if you don't pay at least 100% of the prior year or 90% of the current year tax liability, if you're short, if you haven't met either of those, then whatever the amount in excess of that, that you haven't got, the below that amount, you're going to be penalized on it. And now the interest assessment's 8% per year. So it actually hurts now. Those can really add up, the interest and penalties like they hadn't in the past. And then conversely, the adage as well, if you give a big, you get a big refund, yeah, it might feel nice, but really what you did is, give the IRS a loan for 0% interest. Well, I remember years ago, people were like, oh, I don't care. I get nothing in my bank anyway, so they can have it. And then I like to get it back. Well, now you can put it in a 4% money market fund and sit on it. So if you do get a $30,000 refund and you could have a $3,000 refund, any amount, and you could have put that in interest and earned thousands or hundreds of dollars in interest, then like, a little bit of an opportunity cost. So you do kind of want to get a little more square. And usually that entails either adjusting withholdings through your paycheck or maybe setting up quarterly payments or just realizing more deduction opportunities to offset it.
Right. And how difficult is it to set everything up so that you get it just right? So you are not getting a lot back. You didn't give that 0% loan to the IRS and you don't owe a lot. You pretty much hit that sweet spot.
It can be challenging if it's not something you do, right? So a good tax preparer, CPA, they can help you get pretty close. We have clients that do prepare their own taxes, and a lot of them, like maybe they worked in finance, or they were an accountant, or, you know, just somebody who liked numbers and they always kind of did their taxes because that's what they always did. We have tax planning software and we can model it out and we can get pretty close. But without those tools or experience, you're doing a bit of guesswork. So especially if you're in those situations, that'd be another, I think, indicator that you probably should have a tax preparer, because you're missing the boat on something if that's happening year in and year out. I mean, it can always happen to somebody in a transitional year. You sell a house, you cash out a retirement plan, somebody dies. There are going to be these things that happen that 1 year can send you off, but it shouldn't be recurring.
Right, and if we haven't talked about it yet, what's a frequently asked question that you're getting at ClearPath Financial Partners this time of year as people are doing their taxes that people need to know about?
I would say, definitely talked, kind of hit on a few of them. A lot of times it is there anything more I can do? Already had those conversations usually by like October, November. So there is time to take advantage of all the things on the table at this point. I mentioned like IRAs, retirement plan contributions, HSAs are another big one, health savings accounts. You have to have a qualifying healthcare plan that meets the high deductible standards. But if you have one of those, then the HSA is the most tax advantaged plan that exists in this country, because you get a deduction on the way in, it grows, compounds tax deferred, and you can actually pull it out tax free if you've had any out-of-pocket expenses that justify it. And they're cumulative through a lifetime. So it's a great vehicle. I don't want to get too deep into it, but that's still on the table as well. I just made my contribution for last year, which will help lower the tax bill a little bit. One that's been coming up actually, Hank, that's worth noting is, we know that housing prices have like gone way up the last, several years, but especially the last few years, right? So people have seen huge increases in their home value. This wasn't coming up at all until pretty recently because when you normally, if you buy a real estate property and then down the road you sell it and you make a profit, you have to pay taxes on it, capital gains taxes. There is a personal residence exclusion. So if it's your primary residence and you sell it for a gain, a lot of that is excluded. And for most people, all of it's excluded. So those limits are $250,000 for an individual or $500,000 for a couple. There are a lot of people they bought a house. I think of some of my clients kind of like maybe downsizing in retirement, or they're moving to be closer to the kids, or they're whatever, moving down to Florida because they want to get the heck out of the New England winters. But they, maybe they bought that house for $70,000 in 1984, and now they sell it, and especially if it's just one of them, it's pretty easy to see more than a $250,000 increase, right? Say they got divorced, or their spouse died, or something like that. They can see a massive tax bill that a lot of people don't even think about. You can't completely avoid it, but what I notice are people have not kept proper records if they've made what are called capital improvements to their house, which is anything that's not a repair. It's not just like fixing something, but if you put an addition on, you renovate a kitchen, you put even a new roof, you do a driveway, these things are capital improvements and they add to the cost basis. So it mitigates the gain that could be taxable. Problem is, a lot of people never reported them as that happened. And now I'm like, oh my Lord, like you bought this house for 70 grand and you're selling it for 600,000. Like, oof, we better, go back and talk to your accountant, or at least adjust your tax records to say, like, get the receipts. What did we do? What were the big money items? And you want to adjust the cost basis so that you don't get a massive surprise bill from selling a house.
Wow. All right. That's some great advice. That's where we're going to end it for this podcast of ClearPath Financial Partners. Ryan, people want to get in touch with you, with your team, use your services. How do they do that?
Website's a great place to start. It's clearpathfinancialpartners.com. There's a lot of just resources on there, some FAQs, a bit about our services, and you can contact us through Get in Touch with Us link, and happy to jump on a call and just chat with anybody out there who has some questions. Happy to get on the horn and be a resource if we can be.
For Ryan Kittredge, President, Financial Advisor, ClearPath Financial Partners. I'm Hank Stoltz. Thank you for joining us on this episode of ClearPath Financial Partners podcast.
The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. Individual tax matters should be discussed with your tax professional.